So this happened last night. John Eastman, the disgraced ex-president's co-defendant in the case to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia, as well as an unindicted co-conspirator, number two in Jack Smith's case, went on Fox News to discuss the details of the ongoing case against him, claiming that there is no evidence that he knew he was trying to illegally overturn an election. Watch that.
On the RICO side of the Fulton County case, that would require findings of bad faith. That would have to be you all basically agreeing implicitly, explicitly, that y'all knew that this was all phony. And to that, you say?
Well, they've got all the evidence. They've got all my emails. My phone was seized over a year ago, so they've got all that stuff as well. And I challenge them to find a single email or communication that supports that implausible theory.
When Nicole Wallace of MSN gave that report, you should have seen her smile. She is so happy. She's so happy that a man's life is being ruined. It's just great. Isn't it wonderful to watch? So she plays that clip, and then John says, well, they've got everything. They got my phone. They have all my email. And the inference being there's nothing in there that says what they're accusing me of. And so she goes on after that statement by John and continues. Let's listen, 1A.
Challenge accepted. So here's what's in his own emails. This is what the January 6th Select Committee found in that guy's emails. Watch.
Dr. Eastman himself admitted in an email that the fake electors had no legal weight, referring to the fake electors as, quote, dead on arrival in Congress.
So even after the attack on the Capitol had been quelled, Dr. Eastman requested, in writing no less, that the vice president violate the law by delaying the certification and sending the question back to the states. Is that correct, Mr. Jacob?
It is. Just a few days later, Dr. Eastman emailed Rudy Giuliani and requested that he be included on a list of potential recipients of a presidential pardon.
Okay, so that was the J6 committee. And Nicole's laughter when she talked about that. Well, listen, we're going to talk to John Eastman today because he just lost his bar license in California, which is, you know, really terrible. When you know his record, you know, when I do introduce John in a few minutes, you'll hear what an absolutely stellar record he has. And I couldn't possibly list everything. He's accomplished so much. I'm not going to really talk about that, his past accomplishments, but I give you his the organizations he was affiliated with and things that he did, like National Organization for Marriage, which is fighting gay marriage. Those are the kinds of things John has done, and of course, much broader than that. He clerked for Clarence Thomas. He's just a man of integrity, and you'll hear that when he talks to me. But I want to go back to Nicole Wallace because she, when John and I, we've already recorded the interview, so that's the reason I'm saying it the way I am. But when we talk, you'll hear him talking about them speculating about what he's thinking. And that reminded me of Nicole had a little bit of that. She played with that, too. This is clip two.
I guess another thing we've learned, Glenn, is that back in the court of law, state of mind is so central. And we have a lot of public-facing evidence of Eastman's state of mind. I mean, we know that Eastman is the one who said, we'd only lose 7-2 in the Supreme Court. Ah, no, you're right. 9-0. So he knows that his gambit is unconstitutional. He knows it's illegal. He knows it violates the Electoral Count Act. And he knows that he personally committed crimes. That's why he seeks a pardon. He seems to be in it's not a technical term, but deep doo-doo legally.
He doesn't know he committed a crime. Oh my gosh, if you want to get your news from MSN, you go right ahead. Or, you know, CNN. I mean, they're still not trustworthy. They're just not. And Fox News is not always trustworthy either. That's kind of a theme with me lately. I hope that you would agree that I'm trustworthy. That's certainly my goal. I'm not trying to propagandize you. I'm telling you what I think based on facts. I may not always get that wrong. I'm right. I might have some facts I'm missing. But as far as I can tell from what I'm reading, from people I talk to, that I can trust. I tell you what I believe is true. But that's not the case with most journalists now. It's just amazing. It's either they're making money off their podcasts and they say outrageous things to get more clicks and make more money, or, you know, or the sources are just absolutely untrustworthy. So just be careful. And when the issue of John Eastman comes up, really be careful because you won't really know who he is unless you listen to someone like me or are willing to dig a little bit deeper. Well, John's going to join us in a second, and we'll sort out some of what was said in those clips. But first, right now, the voices in our culture are loud, but truth is often silent. And today, Preborn needs you to help speak that truth. Women facing unplanned pregnancies are often pressured to act quickly before they have time to pause, breathe, or hear the truth about life, dignity, and hope. But I refuse to be silent, and I'm asking you to join me. At Preborn Network Clinics, a woman is welcomed with compassion and given a free ultrasound. She sees the life growing inside her, often for the very first time, and in that sacred moment, fear gives way to clarity. And she's offered something the abortion industry will never provide, and that's the hope of Jesus Christ, the hope of forgiveness, the hope for her baby, just hope, living hope. This April, our goal, meaning Preborn's goal, is to have 11,000 gospel conversations, that's conversations about Jesus, in Preborn Network clinics, trusting God to bring the increase as we remain faithful to speak. You can help make that possible by sponsoring ultrasounds. And you know that because if you listen to the show, you know that. And you probably remember it's only $28 for one ultrasound. Just $28. And of course, any multiple of that, $140 sponsors five ultrasounds. That's so that a mom can see her baby in utero. And, you know, I think something like, well, it's over half. It may be 60%. I wish I had the exact percentage of the women who see their baby in that 40 ultrasound just can't bring themselves to terminate the life. It's pretty amazing. It's just, it's God's magic, really, to see that baby. And so if you would like to provide an ultrasound for these moms and also make it possible for that conversation to take place about forgiveness and living hope, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to be talking to John Eastman on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
So guess who just got disbarred and lost their law license? This guy, John Eastman, disbarred in California, just upheld by the California Supreme Court. He was the architect in 2020 of the president's legal strategy to pressure the vice president into refusing to accept the electoral votes, into essentially refusing to seat Donald Trump as president, even though he lost the election. So the California bar initiated proceedings against him. The judge sustained those findings, finding that he was involved in a historic effort to overturn a free and fair election, and basically said that he could not be trusted to have a law license in the state of California. So one less corrupt lawyer in California. Awesome result, upheld by the courts.
That was the voice of Adam Schiff. And I guess you could say that anytime you hear Adam Schiff speaking badly about someone, you probably know that they are a really wonderful person, a real American, a real patriot. Well, that would be true in this case because John Eastman is one of those kinds of people. Let me give you just a little bit of John's bio before we talk to him today. John is the founding director of the Claremont Institute Center for Constitutional Jurisprudence, senior fellow of the Claremont Institute. He was a former professor of law and community service in the School of Law. He served as a clerk for Justice Thomas. He worked for Kirkland and Ellis. He began teaching at Chapman University. He was the chairman of the Federalist Society's Federalism and Separation of Powers Practice Group, chairman of the board of the National Organization for Marriage, advisor for the board at St. Thomas More Society of Orange County. You know what? I could go on and on. He's an author, He has done so many wonderful things. He fought against gay marriage. On the birthright citizenship, he did the most work to do the research and create the case before the Supreme Court. And you've heard him on my show many times, but according to the press and the people that we don't agree with, John is an absolute criminal. And he's just lost his law license in California. So, John, it's a very sketchy overview of what's happening, but good morning and thanks for joining us.
Sandy, it is always a real pleasure to be on your show and to be able to connect with your wonderful audience. The movement, the activist movement that your audience reflects and is at the forefront of is what's going to save this country. So thank you.
Well, thank you, John. That's so sweet. And, you know, we've talked about this ongoing saga now. Has it been 3 years?
Oh, it's been 4.5 years.
Okay.
Since the original complaint. And, you know, I'll just take Adam Schiff's statements apart one by one. The first thing he said is that the bar initiated this. That's not true. States United Democracy Center initiated this with a complaint they filed in October of 2021. States United Democracy Center is a hyper-partisan organization designed to go after all the Trump lawyers who were involved in the election challenges. It was joined by another complaint filed by a group called Lawyers Defending American Democracy, inaptly named group, who actually colluded with the bar lawyers to bring this charge, you know, completely destroying any notion of neutral prosecution that we have in this country. So that's lie number one from Adam Schiff. And during the course of our conversation, I think we'll probably ring that lie bell about a dozen times.
Yes, I think you're right. And the thing with you is that you never get tired of speaking the truth. And when you respond, it's just truth, truth, truth. And it's very irritating to people, even good people. One of the most distressing things to me on your behalf is how many people who know better, I've seen them distance themselves from you, John, just as though you have cooties, like they don't want to be affiliated with you. And people not willing to give you jobs or positions. I just find that as distressing as the California Supreme Court taking away your law license. They're a bunch of numbskulls out there anyway and don't have any values. But for good people, supposedly, it's been shocking to me.
I've had people, you know, yeah, that's actually, I mean, one expects this behavior from the left. That's who they are. But I've had people tell me, you know, I would never cancel you, but my donors are saying I can't continue to have you on my board. Or I would never cancel you, but I can't have you in the next edition of the publication that we've done. We didn't cancel you. We just block you from every event that we're going to hold for the next several years. So these are from supposed friends. You know, years and years ago, Justice Thomas gave a very important speech at the commencement of Syracuse University Law School. And he said, you know, when things are good, all your friends want to know you. But when things are bad, you know who your friends are. And that's become very clear to me.
Yeah, I had that experience, too, in Washington, D.C. I want to go into it right now, but let's just say I lost a job. And it was because I did something that was very right. It was like rats leaving the building. I mean, and also just nobody offering me jobs as though I somehow this sullen cloud had settled over me. It didn't matter really what I had done or not done, but the appearance, they don't want to be around anyone or embrace anyone who's like in trouble. It's just, I guess it's human nature, but it's really disturbing to watch it, John. All right. So when we've had this long saga of talking about this, and I'm assuming that everything from appearing on January 6th to President Trump, making that speech, encouraging President Pence to not certify the electors until the states had a chance to settle their disputes, and on and on, and all those things, and the Fulton County in Arizona. I want to talk about those things, but I'm just saying, I'm assuming that was all wrapped into one package and presented to the California Supreme Court. And you, as I recall, John, you had developed this defense that and contained all of the evidence, really, I would suspect, knowing you, all the evidence to show that the 2020 election was stolen. Didn't you have that? And you had all these people testifying to that effect. Did that actually happen during the long course of this?
Well, Well, we did. I mean, it started off as this complaint filed in October of 2021. It was so patently absurd, we didn't think it was going to go anywhere. But the following, then Lawyers Defending American Democracy group weighed in with a separate complaint and then actually started coordinating with the lawyers at the bar to try and get this thing over the finish line. So in May of 2022, they sent me the most extraordinary letter demanding information, saying basically, you've said that there, you know, was illegality and fraud in the election, but you have no evidence for it. What evidence do you have? And we said, all right, none of the courts wanted to look at this. Here's now the opportunity to put all the evidence into the record. So we spent the next 4 months responding thoroughly and comprehensively to that demand letter and a supplemental demand letter they issued to me. None of it mattered. None of the evidence we showed them, none of the links to the testimony, the sworn affidavits, all of that, none of it mattered. In January of 2023, they brought the bar charges anyway. And then what proceeded after that was a 10-week-long, 34 days, most expensive and longest bar disciplinary proceeding in history. And they were putting on, you know, hearsay evidence. Well, you know, you said the election in Michigan was flawed and illegal, but, you know, a press release put out by the Secretary of State said it was perfect, so you must be lying. Or Chris Krebs, the head of the security CISA organization, the federal government, said, you know, laughably, this was the most secure election in our nation's history. And you know, Eastman says otherwise, so he must be lying and knowingly lying. And so those are you know, disbarrable offenses. Now, there are several things there. One, last I checked, when the government says something not under oath, you don't have to take it as gospel truth, particularly when you have information that shows that it's false. We're not required to genuflect by statements of government. That's part of our core protection under the First Amendment's free speech rights. And yet the bar said, well, you know, when you made a public statement, my favorite example is one of the charges against me is when I said, when I spoke on the mall on January 6th, right before President Trump, I said that we know dead people voted. And the charge, here's the charge that they made against me. Eastman knew that was false because by then the Inspector General of Michigan had already determined that only 1,500 dead people voted. In other words, they admit in the very same paragraph that where they make this allegation that what I said was true. And then they say, well, what you really meant by to convey by that was that more dead people voted than affected the election and the outcome of the election. And it's just, I never said any such thing. So these false inferences to bolster their false narrative that the election was perfect and free and fair, that's line number two from Adam Schiff when he said it was a free and fair election. you know, they do this to bolster the narrative and to not only silence, but to completely destroy and discredit anybody who dares to put up the evidence that shows how false their narrative is. Now, line number three from Schiff, he says, I was the architect of the whole thing to pressure Pence to, you know, elect Trump. That's just false. You know, this is based on a internal memo that was leaked to the press 10 months later, where I laid out all of the scenarios that were being discussed in public, you know, and so that we could discuss internally which one we thought we had most salience. In five of those scenarios, Biden wins, but you never hear, you know, Schiff or anybody else, Liz Cheney or anybody else referencing that. And to my knowledge, you know, what you put down in a back of the envelope type brainstorming document for internal discussion purposes only to try and decide upon a course of action has never been the subject of bar things, and yet this is what they claim. The lie that they claim was in there was that I said there were dual slates of electors from seven different states, which is true. The Republican electors in seven different states where there was still litigation pending had cast their own votes and sent them to Congress, just like John Kennedy's electors in Hawaii did in 1960. So what they claim I said was false was actually not false. It was true. And even if it wasn't true, speaking in public about such hotly contested issues is fully protected by the First Amendment. And this is where our U.S. Supreme Court challenge is going to be on which it's going to be based, is the utter disregard and violation of my First Amendment rights.
Hey,
judge said, because I had a client, I don't have the same First Amendment rights as everybody else does. And the Supreme Court has rejected that so-called professional discount on First Amendment freedoms. They did it a decade ago in a case I was involved with out in California, the National Institute for Freedom for Family Life and Advocacy versus Becerra, where the California tried to order pro-life pregnancy centers to advertise for abortion. And we won that case. And then just a couple weeks ago, the Supreme Court dealt with the counselors advising people who wanted to get away from same-sex attraction and transgenderism and struck down Colorado's law that prohibited them from engaging in that speech because professional speech is not entitled to lesser protection than any other kind of speech. And yet that's exactly what the California bar did here as well. So, you know, these lies that keep being put out. I'll give you one other one, Sandy, that I think most people remember. Seeing the people in State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, Fulton County, Georgia, being told that counting was being shut down for the night and it would not start until 8:30 the next morning. So they went home. And then after that, and here's what we allege in the complaint that we filed, ballot suitcases that had been hidden under a table were pulled out and processing of occurred. Now, they contended that that was a lie because by saying suitcases and hidden, I inferred that the ballots were fraudulent. And that was a lie because I had no basis for making such a claim. But the other part of the allegation specifically said, and we're not making any contention about whether the ballots were valid or not valid because we don't know. That's the whole point of observation. And Georgia law requires that before ballots are processed, the political parties be given an opportunity to observe, which they were denied. That was the illegality. It was unambiguous in the complaint. And they said I meant something by that allegation that in fact was not true, but I must be lying because of what they inferred I really meant by that. This was the kind of Orwellian nonsense that pervaded the bar disciplinary proceeding. I'm sorry, I keep going on this, but it's at the top of my forefront and my head right now. One other thing, I filed a motion to intervene in Texas's original action against Pennsylvania and three other states in the Supreme Court of the United States. My client was President Trump. And the issue that had to be addressed by the bar was whether any reasonable attorney would have made such a filing. Now, the fact that the Texas Attorney General and Solicitor General made the filing and I just sought to join and intervene in their behalf should have answered that question. But there were six other state attorney generals that sought to intervene and adopted my brief, and 17 state attorney generals that filed an amicus brief in our support. And so the notion that no reasonable attorney would have done what I did is blown out of the water. So what happened to that evidence in the trial court and the bar court? The judge said it was not relevant that 17 attorney generals in the country agreed with me. But she admitted into evidence briefs from the secretaries of state in the states that were being sued who said that the election was perfectly fair. And then the holding is, well, there's no evidence that the election wasn't full and fair because she refused to let us put that evidence in. So, again, yeah, that's now our due process claim that will be going to the U.S. Supreme Court. It was the most partisan, biased, dripping with hostility and animosity set of hearing, and again, the longest one I've ever seen in bar disciplinary history that we've ever witnessed. And anybody that says that I deserve to be disbarred because I was lying has not bothered to look at the thousands of pages of evidence and sworn testimony and historical record that we put into the evidence or the information that the judge refused to let us put into the evidence.
And I think, didn't they even deny some testimony that was that you'd brought people in to testify?
Directly on point. And here's another example. So we had an expert, a professional CPA, part of the International Society of CPAs, recognized by the state of Maryland as he's now applying his forensic accounting skill set to elections as somebody whose advice and recommendations should be put into effect. The judge refused to let him testify. for two reasons. One, because he hadn't ever done prior to 2020 any election-related accounting, only other-related accounting, which is nonsense. But the second reason she denied his testimony was because it was based on a book he wrote a year and a half or 2 years after the election. And she said, well, Eastman could not possibly have relied on that book at the time he was making these statements, so it's not relevant. But when the bar people tried to put into evidence reports that had been done, you know, kind of whitewashing reports that had been ordered by Democrat elected officials that would say, you know, conclude, oh, the election was perfect. Despite the fact that those were also several years later, she let that evidence in. example after example after example of this is how that trial was conducted.
Was that Yvette Rowland or was that the bar court?
That was, Yvette Rowland was the judge of the bar court's hearing department.
Okay.
And she's the one that presided over the whole 10-week-long trial. And then it went up to the review department of the bar court. Now, all of these judges on the bar court are appointed by Democrat officials, some of them by the Democrat majority California Supreme Court, but most of them are by the Democrat top officials in the state Senate and the state assembly. And it's just become it's one thing. It doesn't so much matter that the bar court judges and all the lawyers are Democrats. If what you're looking at is, did somebody steal money from the client trust fund? Do you have an improper romantic relationship with your client? Those kind of things, completely outside the realm of any political ramifications. But for the first time, when the bar courts start decide to step into a hotly contested political controversy, the fact that every one of them bring in this controversy and the outside groups that are lobbying and coordinating and colluding with them to do it are all of the other political party bent on weaponizing the system against their political opponents, you have a huge problem. One of the cornerstones of due process is a neutral and unbiased adjudicator. And you just don't have that in the California system, at least when you're talking about these intensely political and disputed questions like we had.
John, it's just unfortunate that you were in California. And I know that you had a lot of clients, didn't you? That weren't you representing clients in California?
I was. And, you know, when the bar recommendation came down, and by the way, it came down on Wednesday of Holy Week in 2024 and took effect 3 days later. So my son, who is studying for a master's degree in theology, and my daughter decided to write an article of, you know, just that coincidence of the 3 days during Holy Week, the importance of the Triduum for our Lord and Savior. And you know, somebody's accused me of comparing myself to Jesus. That's utter nonsense. I am so religious and so in awe of what happened during that week 2,000 years ago to save the human race from original sin. I would never do that. But the coincidence of that happening in Holy Week and posing this question to me. So what happens when you get a recommendation of disbarment? The bar court can't actually disbar you. You get a recommendation of a disbarment, and that puts you on involuntary inactive status. And so for the last 2 years, I've been on involuntary active status, not eligible to practice in the California courts. But I notified the U.S. Supreme Court of that decision and that consequence, and they said, thanks very much. Let us know if a decision ever becomes final, which I'll be doing in short order. But in the meantime, for the last 2 years, I've been still practicing in the United States Supreme Court, which is where 90% of my practice is anyway. And you know, so the notion that I can't practice in L.A. Superior Court, but I can practice in the Supreme Court of the United States is a little bizarre, but that's what we've been dealing with the last 2 years.
Well, that's where we are as a country. I mean, there are so many examples of that ridiculousness in every issue, whether it's immigration or, you know, citizenship or bringing in babies to be born here to become citizens, birthright, all of that. There's just so much ridiculousness. It's either willful because they want to destroy the country or people are just plain ignorant. But, John, let's go back a little bit. I want to, you know, some of this stuff is very, not everything you're saying to me is familiar to me, but certainly the election of 2020 I covered with great detail even before I ever knew you. And that Texas decision that you referred to, I want to remind people, that was a case where Texas sued these other states because they had done things to change their election laws, to change the dates when ballots had to arrive, to not check signatures. You got, all of them did different things, but there were so many illegalities. And so the issue was, as I recall, John, that those states had affected, states don't usually sue each other, but those states had caused harm to Texas and other states for that matter because they cheated and lied about their election that had an outcome with Joe Biden. It was hurting all the other states. I know that's awkward the way I said it, but that was the gist of the argument, right?
Well, it was. And I have to say, when this idea was first presented to me, when I first saw it raised in public, I thought, well, what basis, what standing, what legal standing does one state have to sue another state for violating their own state election laws? And there was an old case out of the 1980 presidential election. John Anderson had tried to get on the ballot as a third party candidate in the Reagan and Carter election. And Ohio required you to submit paperwork a full year before the election. And people sued to say that's nonsense. We didn't know what the election would look like a year ago. And a bunch of people sued to get John Anderson on the ballot in Ohio. One of the people that had sued was a voter in New Jersey who said, my ability to see the candidate I prefer elected nationwide is affected by this onerous requirement in Ohio. And the Supreme Court said that voter in New Jersey had standing to bring that because the election for president is a national office, and what happens in one state affects how things go in other states. So if a voter in New Jersey had standing to challenge an onerous law in Ohio about ballot access, then surely the state of Texas, on behalf of the millions of Texans who were affected by what happened in Pennsylvania and Georgia and elsewhere, have standing as well. It was at least an argument that warranted consideration by the Supreme Court rather than the back of the hand. We find they have no standing and deny that the one-sentence order that it was given, over a very strong dissent by Justices Thomas and Alito. So this is the kind of stuff we were dealing with. Nobody wanted to touch these election cases. There was a New York Times report that actually said, claimed based on a leak, and leaks are becoming unfortunate coming out of the Supreme Court, including some this week.
Right, exactly.
But there was an alleged leak in the Supreme Court that said Justice Alito had argued that we needed to take these cases up because it's just like Bush versus Gore.
I remember
that. And according to the New York Times account, Chief Justice Roberts yelled at him saying it's not just like Bush versus Gore. After what we just saw going on all summer, they will burn our cities down if we take these cases. That is deeply troubling, and yet it seems to be part of the modus operandi of the far left now, funded with overseas money. But unfortunately, as we were learning during Elon Musk's oversight of the Doge operation at the beginning of the administration, probably funded with money laundered from taxpayers through a lot of these nonprofits and USAID money. I mean, the level of corruption and undermining of our elections that is going on in this country is just staggering. And one of the reasons I decided to fight, I mean, look, I'm of retirement age. One of the reasons I decided to fight in California was they said there was no such evidence, and I had lots of evidence. No court wanted to hear it. And I said, here's an opportunity to put it in the record so that the American people can actually know what was going on, or at least start to understand that there was a whole lot of there that warranted investigation.
Well, all right. So that reminds me of something. Well, first of all, the point is that is for reasonable people and people that you and I know that are otherwise conservative. That's something that they get stuck on. No court would accept. There was no evidence to prove. In fact, you were on with Laura Ingraham on Fox just a couple of nights ago. I watched you. And Laura said to you, well, I never saw any evidence. I've never seen any evidence that there was real fraud or anything, untoward in the 2020 election. That shocked me, John. But that shows you how deeply ingrained the notion that there was, there's just no evidence. There's no evidence of this fraud. This is just these conservatives like Mike Lindell and John Eastman and other people like me just yapping about stuff that they have no proof of. And that's just, well, that in itself is a lie, isn't it?
Well, it is a big lie, and that was a repeat of a show that I did with Laura a year or two ago.
But, oh, really?
But uncharacteristic. Most of my shows with her were live. She pre-taped this one, and she says, well, I've seen no evidence of this. And then I laid out a bunch of the evidence. They cut that out of the interview when they put it on, and then she concluded the show by saying, see, he had no evidence to offer me. Look, we've got a massive report out of Wisconsin by former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman that identified illegality. The Secretary of State ordered the bipartisan teams that are legally required to be able to go in to get ballots out of nursing homes. She prohibited them from going into the nursing homes. The turnout rates in nursing homes ran from 25% to nearly 100%, including in memory care wings of the nursing homes. And many of the ballots were in the same handwriting. So the illegality opened the door for fraud. Justice Gableman and his investigative team proved that people walked through the door with that fraud. That affected hundreds of thousands of ballots. The margin in Wisconsin was just a little over 20,000. In Georgia, we've now got evidence that ballots were replicated and multiple counted inside the machines. We've got evidence that they did not do signature verification in Fulton County, Georgia. We've got evidence that over 350,000 ballots were in the system without any chain of custody. We've got evidence that on the recount, Fulton County came up about 17,000 votes short, and all of a sudden magically appeared 17,000 or 18,000 votes the next morning to make the books balance. We've got all of that evidence. In Pennsylvania, the Secretary of State unilaterally eliminated the signature verification process that was mandated by state law. And the importance of this is Article 2 of the Constitution makes clear that only the state legislature has authority to set the rules for choosing presidential electors. So all of these actions by county clerks and secretaries of state and even state court judges to alter the rules or ignore the rules violated the Constitution. To this day, there are 121,000 more ballots that were recorded in Pennsylvania than there were voters who were recorded. Yet the Pennsylvania Secretary of State's office continues to lie about that on its website. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of the evidence we had. And the claim that the federal courts 65 times looked at this and they rejected these claims every single time is just false. In almost all of the 65 cases, they didn't even bother to address the merits. They dismissed the cases on various technical procedural grounds. You brought it too early. You brought it too late. You weren't the right party to brought it. It was in the wrong court. And we never got a fulsome account of the merits of these claims for which there was ample evidence.
John, do you think anybody in this country has the same encyclopedic knowledge that you do about what happened in 2020 in the election?
I wasn't involved. I was actually down with COVID for most of November. I'd been asked for advice the weekend after the election, very briefly, in the campaign legal headquarters in Philadelphia. I happened to be in town for a conference. And then I caught COVID and was down for 3 weeks. So a lot of this stuff got started and concluded, when I wasn't even available. But when the president when Texas filed its motion, original action in the Supreme Court, and the president wanted to intervene, he asked me to do that on his behalf. And in Supreme Court filings, you have to have your name and your address and your phone number and email listed on the filing. And so my email address became the one thing that was publicly available to people the world over. And I became, you know, kind of a triage nurse. The amount of information that started coming my way, because people now had an email address that they thought could get directly to the president. And so I became well aware of a lot of this stuff. And, you know, and I said triage because some of it was a little crazy and some of it was very concerning, but we would not have the ability to prove it one way or the other in the limited time we had available. But some of it was verifiable, supported by sworn affidavit, supported by statistical analysis, supported by expert reports. And it was on those things that we went forward to say something smells to high heaven here, and we really need to investigate this.
Why didn't more people see it that way? You know, it's like it really is. I mentioned Laura. I think that she has a lot to answer for on that. And I'm Bill Barr, who all along during that time said to us, no, he thought there was a reason to be concerned about this. And then at the end, he said he didn't see any evidence. And I remember talking to you about this, and you said he didn't look at the evidence. Is that right?
Well, yeah. So Bill Barr says this in early December. Now, you know, evidence is still being gathered, but he says, you know, we've not uncovered any evidence of enough fraud to have affected the election. Now, there are three important things about that, four important things about that statement. First is it was a statement to a media reporter. It was not under oath. Second, he didn't talk about illegality. He only talked about fraud, and that's a pretty significant omission. Third, it was early December. There was still evidence being gathered. But fourth, we've subsequently learned that even though publicly he was telling people to investigate this, privately he was ordering people not to investigate. We've got this in a letter from the U.S. attorney in Pennsylvania, who said he started investigating the 200,000 ballots that came in from Long Island and were dumped into Philadelphia. And Bill Barr called him personally and told him to stand down. And then subsequently, Freedom of Information Act requests were submitted to every one of the U.S. attorney's offices in all of the swing states and to Maine Justice, asking for all the information about the investigations that Bill Barr said they had done and that demonstrated there wasn't enough evidence of fraud to have affected the outcome. Well, you know, investigative materials are exempt from having to be disclosed under FOIA, but if there are such materials, you have to tell people their materials exist, but they're exempt from disclosure. In every one of the cases that this FOIA guy had asked for, that's not the response he got back. The response he got back was there are no responsive documents and materials, which means Bill Barr looks like he lied when he said we've done these investigations and found nothing. You know, and yet because I didn't, you know, bend a knee and believe what he said because I had evidence to the contrary, I'm being accused of making false statements because I knew, knowingly false, because I knew what, you know, the Bill Barr had said there wasn't any evidence when I had the evidence in my hand.
Well, that's interesting because I was just reading and prepping to talk to you about this that Roland, I don't know who that Roland is.
She was the trial judge in the California bar.
Okay, sorry. So she said, they go back on this case that happened during Nixon's campaign, and we don't have to talk about that. It's Donald Segretti. What was similar to what happened with you, but she said Segretti was 30 at the time and was remorseful. To the contrary, Eastman has exhibited an unwillingness to acknowledge any ethical lapses regarding his actions, demonstrating an apparent inability to accept responsibility. So this is what they did to the J6ers too, you know, John. If they didn't apologize or admit or recant that they thought the election had been stolen, they got a higher sentence or, you know, they got terrible treatment. And it sounds like the same theme with you.
Well, it is, and the reason I'm not showing remorse is because nothing I said was false. It's the false narrative that they're claiming I have to bend the knee to and genuflect toward that is driving this thing. Their narrative has been called, you know, so unraveled at every level that by going after the people that insist that the narrative is false is the only way they have to keep propping it up. And, you know, and I don't know why this is part of my character, but I just can't let that kind of stuff stand down. And so I continue to press it. Look, I get indicted in Arizona, even though I had almost nothing to do with Arizona. No communications with electors, no involvement in any of the legal challenges. But I'm included in the indictment in Arizona, I believe, because the State United Democracy Center, which was hired by the Arizona Attorney General to prepare the prosecution strategy. This is nonsense. They're the same group that filed the Barr complaint against me. They're the same hyper-partisan group going after lawyers all over the country, that anybody that is associated with President Trump. The notion that you hire a group like that to work on your prosecution strategy, it's like hiring the Fox to do the safety memo on your hen house. It's utter nonsense. And yet I think that because I continue to shine a light on the illegality that obviously occurred, that they have to kneecap me and silence me and scare the heck out of anybody else who would dare take up the baton from me if I get stopped from doing it. And well, so they get me indicted as well. I mean, this is lawfare on steroids. And thank God that Joe DiGenova has just been named as the top counselor to the Attorney General of the United States to take over and start really crossing the T's and dotting the I's on what I believe is a nationwide conspiracy against the political opposition and to deprive Biden administration's political opposition of our constitutional rights.
You know, just to prove your point, Christine's son is with the state's United Democracy Center, and she actually issued a statement. And she said that they asked California's attorney discipline officials to investigate you in 2020. And she said this decision, meaning the Supreme Court's decision disbarring you, is part of a broader reckoning for those who seek to undermine the rule of law. While Trump tries to consolidate power, the states and courts continue to successfully check executive overreach and the unlawful actions of his administration. So this is what they're trying to do. They're confessing that they are. And we also know that there are entities that are openly threatening anyone in the Trump administration, and especially the attorneys, John. It's pretty scary. And
And this reminds me of another piece of the trial. One of the other people that worked for State's United Democracy Center was named Bo Duhl, D-U-H-L. And she was by then working in the Arizona Secretary of State's office, and I believe now for the Arizona Governor, Katie Hobbs. She was called as a witness in the Barr trial. We tried to cross-examine her on the fact that she had worked at State's United Democracy Center, the very group that brought the Barr complaint against me, in order to show her bias. The judge refused to let us question her about that. showing the bias of a witness is like, you know, cross-examination tool 101, and we were refused. It has been described in the press, including by the leading reporter who observed every single day of the trial, Rachel Alexander, as the most biased and hostile and kangaroo court was the language some used proceeding that they'd ever witnessed. And yet here we are because too many on the Republican. I mean, heaven's sakes, we can't even get the United States Senate to try and fix the problem of illegality in elections by just doing something as simple as requiring that people vote only by showing a voter ID, a photo ID. And we can't get that. That's an 85 or 90% to 10% issue among the American people. And the spineless wonders that occupy the seats in the United States Senate on the Republican side of the aisle, way too many of them, can't even get that across the finish line. And so the notion that some of this stuff is going to get fixed if we just sit on our hands and hope it goes away, it's just laughably naive or evil. If people that have conducted this witch hunt against President Trump, this decade-long lawfare, this violation of the First Amendment, of the Fourth Amendment, of the Fifth Amendment, if they get away without ever having to be held to account, then the next time they're in power, they will do it tenfold. And the country will be over. I mean, we will no longer have a free country because that's the goal. The goal is to strip us of our constitutional system of government and impose it by something that's more globalist, more elitist, more Marxist, quite frankly, than our Constitution allows.
Well, of course, I agree with you, John, in every way. And now at this point, I'll just ask you one last thing. How much money has this cost you? Because you've been in litigation now 4 years. How much has this cost you?
So far, not counting my own time, which is rather significant. It's about all I've been working on for the last 4.5 years. But not counting that, it's already cost over $2 million. I've just got accused recently on X for being a grifter trying to raise money when I I've raised a lot. My legal defense fund is about to go over the $1 million threshold, a good bump up this past week after the California bar decision came down. But that's a million, and I've already incurred more than $2 million in costs. And to take it to the next step, it's going to be at least another $250,000 to get something before the U.S. Supreme Court. So the notion that there's an old saying, the process is the punishment, and that's certainly what we've been witnessing the last 4.5 years, and all the hundreds of other people that are in the same boat. I happen to be fairly high profile on it, but Jeff Clark was testifying this morning before the Senate Committee on Arctic Frost and describing, what he's gone through. I mean, for heaven's sakes. They confiscated his 12-year-old daughter's diary in a raid on his house, and they made him stand out in the front yard in his underwear for 3.5 hours while they conducted the raid. I mean, this is outrageous. Or Peter Navarro, who lives next door to the FBI building, they waited until he's about to board a plane to go to give a big speech in Tennessee to make an arrest in public when they could have asked him to come in any time. These are Stalinist tactics being conducted by our own government against our own citizens, and the left is claiming that anybody attempt to try and hold those people accountable for what they've done, that's where the real weaponization occurs. It's just Orwellian. It's Alice in the Looking Glass type of stuff, the opposite of what is actually going on. But I got to give them credit. They and their media hound dogs have successfully blamed President Trump for making claims of illegality in the election when it was they that committed the illegal election. I mean, what's the psychological phrase for that? Projection.
Projection.
And they get all the cover they need from the major media and the press. And then, unfortunately, a good portion of the country believes it. And,
yes.
And what's at stake here is well beyond my bar license or President Trump's criminal indictments, but the very notion there are things that, such as truth that we can get to the bottom of if we do full investigations. When people like Adam Schiff just repeatedly lie, or Dick Durbin this morning at the hearing, or White House repeatedly lie and then say it so often that people start believe it. Then when people say the actual truth, they're the ones that are accused of lying. And what loses is the notion that there is any such thing as truth at all. And if people remember to the beginning of the second paragraph of our Declaration of Independence, we are founded on the proposition that all men, the self-evident truth, that all men are created equal. All human beings are created equal in God's eyes. And because of that, we have gifts of life and liberty and property and other inalienable rights from our Creator, not from government. If you throw out the notion that there is anything as objective or self-evident truth, you rip apart the cornerstone of our very system of government in existence. And yet that's what we see happening before our very eyes.
Yeah, but as long as there are people like you, John, that will not bend and will not break. And I think you amaze me. I remember one interview that you were, some hostile reporter was sort of badgering you about confessing, or you still believe there was fraud. In other words, you surely don't. That's just ridiculous. And it was a very tense moment, and you said, yes, I do. Yes, I do. And reminded me of Martin Luther at his hearing at, I think it was the body that was listening to him, but he thought he was going to be martyred, and they asked him this really hard question, and he said, here I stand. I can do no other. I can't say anything else but the truth. And so it's the kind of man that you are that if you don't get saved from this mess that you're in, John, you will have made an incredible, indelible mark on history and the future of this country. So I thank you for that, and I want to say that you have a Give, Send, Go account. You've got kids, you have a family, you've had to move, you've had to leave your house, and I always invite people to be generous and help you. And if they'd like to do that, go to givesendgo.com/Eastman, givesendgo.com/Eastman. Okay, John, it's always a pleasure, and the thing about you is that you're just a happy warrior. I called you yesterday out of concern, and you're like, oh, I'm fine. And so I need whatever medicine you're taking. I need some of that. But anyway, I respect you for it.
I'll tell you, the medicine is my faith.
Yes.
You know, these battles are skirmishes in a world that at the end of the day doesn't matter. So I just, as long as I stay true, what troubles me most is that people that have known me for a very long time and know both my skills and my integrity have so easily succumbed to the false narratives and calumnies that are issued against me by people like at the New York Times or in the California Bar, rather than asking me directly. And you know, shame on them, but they need to grow a little courage and realize that the hour of our success in this country is very late. And as Ronald Reagan famously said, our freedoms are always but just one generation away from being lost. And if we don't fight to defend them, what we pass on to our kids and grandkids will be a history book reminding them of what things used to be. And I'm not willing to let that happen, at least not without a fight.
Well, I'm on that same team. So, John, thanks a lot. And just always appreciate your time. God bless you. And I will see you soon in other situations. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. All right. Take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
All right. You too. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors, just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's Preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
The answer is not to just, you know, take a powder and concede, because then it'll get worse on the next go around. The answer is to fight it with everything we've got, because what's at stake here is too important. People keep asking me, why don't you move on? Why do you keep focused on the 2020 election? I say, well because of the illegality. And Laura, yeah, we don't need to get into the whether there was fraud or not. There was clearly illegality. Non-legislative officials changing the rules of the game up to the election in Pennsylvania, even after the election, changing the rules of the game. And if we don't fight back against that, we'll never have a fair election again. And we will cease to be a people governed by the consent of the governed.
All right. Yes. And that's the kind of courage that John has. And he's right. He's right. If we stop standing for what's true and stop saying it out of fear, we will lose our constitutional system. We'll lose our freedom. We're not going to have a good ending. Mike Davis wrote this about John after he was disbarred this past week. He said, on Wednesday, the leftist California Supreme Court disbarred a brilliant constitutional scholar, John Eastman. His mortal sin was zealous representation of a client, President Donald Trump, during the dispute over the 2020 election. Eastman committed no crime. Indeed, his sham Georgia indictment was dropped after disgraced Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis' disqualification from the case. What the California Supreme Court did was a legal disgrace that occurs generally in banana republics, not in the United States. That's an article that Mike wrote for Fox News that I would recommend to all of you. And it's the title is Clarence Thomas Clerk, John Eastman Disbarred by California Supreme Court. It's a tragic situation. In spite of John's cheerfulness, it's just such an injustice. And now he takes it to the Supreme Court. And, you know, how can we be sure That they will do what's right for John Eastman. They hate the president. They just do. And they've shown us lately that they're not making decisions, many of them, based on the Constitution, but on their dislike for this president. I truly, sincerely believe that. And so we just need to pray for John Eastman. Also, if you have some money that you can afford to give, go to givesendgo.com and give John some help with his legal bills. givesendgo.com/Eastman. All right. Well, thank you so much. I want to remind you that Preborn is our sponsor. We couldn't do what we do without their support. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. It's only $28 for one ultrasound, but of course you can spend a lot more money if you have more money than that to save more babies than just one. $28 times whatever, but whatever you can afford, please go to preborn.com/Sandy and give your most generous donation. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.